Good evening, good morning. We're almost the middle of the night for some of you, wherever you are. My name is John Richardson. I'm speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. And this is a meeting with a number of people who consider themselves to be Americans abroad, people who are negatively impacted by the U.S. extraterritorial tax regime, people who are upset about it. This meeting is the result of a particularly long and I think exuberant, boisterous set of tweets, a Twitter exchange about a week ago, which really exposed, I think, a number of the fault lines in the discussion and, you know, what needs to be achieved to move forward collectively, which, by the way, is the only way to achieve this. To get some results, specifically what we're looking for is to achieve the United States ending its citizenship taxation regime and installing some form of residence-based taxation. But the key point here, and I'm going to make this point upside down, diagonally sideways, is that from the point of view of SEAT, the organization we founded a year ago, Stop Extraterritorial American Taxation, and I think people, once this is explained to them, the goal is to actually sever citizenship from tax residency. In other words, you know, that U.S. tax rules, when they define who's subject to worldwide taxation, a citizenship is not, in fact, the determining issue at all. So, you know, that's the end game here. And I will repeat that, and I'm sure Karen will repeat it, et cetera. So the agenda, at least to get the discussion started, part A, you know, identifying the individual groups and the goals. Now, I want to begin with a critically, critically important point here, okay? And that is, you know, regardless of, you know, some of the negative feelings, you know, regardless of, you know, I think sometimes the nastiness of some of the exchanges, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that what unites people affected by this, that is Americans abroad, is far, far greater than what divides them. And I think that that is an absolutely critical starting point. Okay, nobody is the enemy of anybody else, for sure. That said, you know, there are differing views on, you know, what the goals are, et cetera. Okay, but nobody is the enemy. Okay, so I just lost the outline, but I have it on.
Sorry, there it is. It's back.
It's back.
I opened something on top of it.
I have it anyway. Okay. Now, again, I want to make the point that what we're working for, you know, if you look at 2 and 3, is to actually not make citizenship taxation work better. Okay. In other words, you know, small fixes here and there, you know, as if that's really going to change it. Okay. What we're working towards is a complete severing citizenship from the definition of tax residency. Now, there's been a lot of discussion over the years. You know, do the Democrats cause more problems to America? Do the Republicans cause more problems? That is absolutely the wrong discussion, because
it's not a partisan issue. It's not a partisan issue. Everybody's causing problems, both sides, every side, because they don't understand.
And they will continue to cause problems, okay, as long as there are changes in the tax code, because of the complexity of it. And you can be sure that whoever the government is, they're going to be making changes in the tax code. I mean, the whole Build Back Better Act, or whatever the thing is called, is all about taxation, right? You know, et cetera. So, I mean, it is true that at certain times, some parties have been worse than others, but it's not a partisan issue, okay? And these problems are going to continue regardless of who the government is, as long as the United States defines anybody who's a U.S. citizen as a tax resident of the United States, meaning that they're not only subject to worldwide taxation, not only are they subject to U.S. taxation on income they earn outside the United States, but they are subject to the whole set of reporting requirements, penalties, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the way this thing operates is unconscionable. It is extraordinary. And it really shows you why it has to go, because not only are Americans abroad, when they leave the United States, still subject to U.S. tax rules, but because of the hatred of the United States of anything that's foreign, meaning that it's not U.S., they end up actually being subject to a tax regime that is far, far more punitive, right? For example, I mean, a very simple example, you know, you buy Templeton Mutual Fund in Buffalo, New York, it's a good investment. Warren Buffett would say my favorite holding period is forever. You buy it in Toronto, Canada, same damn fund, same holding the same things. All of a sudden it's foreign, okay? You know, which makes it subject to a separate kind of taxes and becomes a PFIC, et cetera, right? So not only are U.S. citizens the only people in the world, all right, who are still subject to U.S. worldwide taxation when they leave and become tax residents of another country, but it's an even more brutal form of taxation. And, you know, this really hit the radar, I don't know, a year, year and a half ago, whenever that whole batch, it was like thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Form 3528 penalties went out to all these people. You know, these were $10,000 penalties for the sole crime of having to comply with these U.S. tax laws. I mean, it was shocking. It was unbelievable. And this has got to go. And I would point out also that, you know, sure, it's true that Congress makes the laws, but so much of the Internal Revenue Code delegates in the form of regulations to IRS Treasury that a great deal of this simply operates on an administrative level, which is really effectively irrelevant to the political process anyway, right? The only way to change this with finality, all right, would be to sever citizenship from tax residency. Now, Karen and I and Laura Snyder, I wrote an article about a year ago called A Regulatory Fix for Citizenship Taxation. Our view is, and it was in tax notes, and anybody who wants this stuff, it's on the seat site. But, you know, that provides a blueprint for how this can be fixed on the level of a Treasury, IRS, et cetera. Okay, so, you know, this has got to be the goal. Now, if I can just explain, you know, hopefully I don't have to get into too much detail here. So the only people who are clear that the end game is separating citizenship from tax residency would be seat and would be Republicans overseas. All right. Everybody else on the planet uses the definition of, they say they want residency-based taxation. But if you look carefully, what these things tend to be, well, what they in fact have been exclusively, all right, including the holding bill of 2018 was, yes, U.S. citizens remain tax residents. Absolutely. Born in the United States, we don't give a damn where you live. You are subject to the provisions of the Internal Revenue Code. What these things have been, including the holding bill, has said, yes, you're still a U.S. tax resident, but you know what? We're going to give you a break on some of your non-U.S. source income, right? In other words, sort of an expansion of the foreign earned income exclusion. And I've got to tell you, that will work for some people some of the time, but people will be forever blindsided. Let me give you an example that I became aware of just a week or so ago. I was watching a friend of mine, Monty Silver, who some of you may know, do a presentation. And, you know, he was talking about the Build Back Better changes being proposed. And he said, well, you know, so one of the things that's happening is they're extending the Obamacare surtax, that 3.8% surtax, you know, so it includes more things that are not necessarily investment income, certain types of business income, et cetera. And, you know, it was interesting to me, he mentioned that, but what he did not say, which was interesting to me, he didn't say that that was going to create more double taxation for Americans abroad, right? Completely unintentional, because the way the Internal Revenue Code is written, the 3.8% Obamacare surtax, it's just like a charge on investment income. Foreign taxes cannot be used as a tax credit to offset it, right? Now, some of you may be saying, well, you know, I don't have much investment income. That doesn't affect me. In the same way that, you know, when the transition tax and GILTI came out, they would say, well, you know, I don't have a small business. That doesn't affect me. or I don't have mutual funds, that doesn't affect me, et cetera. But I really want to make the point here that this problem of what, you know, you can call citizenship taxation if you want to call it that, but understand what it really is the U.S. imposing worldwide taxation on people who don't live in the United States, are tax residents of other countries, and even have no income, you know, in the United States. This is a huge, huge problem. And what I want to say is that it's a problem that is far greater than the way it affects any one individual. So you might, for example, you know, say, well, I don't have a real big problem right now. You know, foreign direct income exclusion works for me, or, you know, whatever. But any change in your stage of life can create a problem. You know, for example, foreign direct income exclusion, it's just that earned income. Say you retire and all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to live off pension income. Look out. Okay. You know, the foreign direct income exclusion doesn't cover that. You know, it's, I mean, I could go on and on and on. But my point is this, that these things that say, well, you know, we're gonna remain U.S. tax residents, but we're just going to expand the foreign direct income exclusion, for example, you know, to other kinds of income, which would be part of what the buyer bill was, you know, trying to do, this, you know, thing that came out a couple of months ago or whatever, are at best going to be a solution for only some people and only at some times in their lives, right? Now, again, all right, one, so the problem is bigger than any one individual, and most people don't even understand the extent of the problem. You know, we're here, you know, talking about, you know, trying to identify groups, you know, who are affected by this. Next point I want to make is there are actually structural problems here in advocacy. Now, let me try to explain this. You know, obviously this applies to anybody who, you know, is identified as a U.S. citizen who lives outside the United States. But, you know, that's not one group of people, okay? And this is a bit of an oversimplification, but just to make the point on the structural problems, you know, we could start with the expat. So I would define an expat as somebody who, you know, is, you know, maybe long-term outside the United States, but their goal is to go back to the United States, you know, to live and retire. And generally that means their financial center of gravity, their financial planning, et cetera, okay, is going to be inside the United States. And therefore, they don't have one huge set of problems, right? Because their financial planning is in the United States according to U.S. tax laws. The second group would be immigrants, all right? And these are people who left the United States permanently. You know, that's it. I mean, their whole income, their financial planning, their retirement planning, all of it exists under the rules of the tax system of the country where they live and not in the United States. They don't have U.S. assets. It's just that everything they do have is subject to the U.S. tax regime, but is so in an extremely punitive manner, okay? And for those people who, you know, I mean, nobody knows what the statistics are and who files U.S. taxes, what percentage, but it is clear that not everybody does. You know, the ones who do file, who are the immigrants, it's just pure hell. I mean, they're practically disabled from normal financial planning. I mean, they're basically permanently downwardly mobile people economically in the countries where they live because of this. The third group would be, you know, what you would recognize as the accidental Americans. They don't have a tax problem because they don't file, right? I mean, to them, this whole thing started, you know, with FACA about 10 years ago. And their problem is banking access, right? That's all they really care about. You know, they just want to renounce citizenship, banking access. I mean, to be sure, I've helped, you know, a lot of them over the years come into compliance and manage that for the purposes of renunciation. But that is not their priority. Now, why is this a problem in bringing people together? Well,
there's a fourth group, John, there's a fourth group which is the U.S. retirees abroad.
And they're not affected by this at all. And why?
They're not affected by this at all. And they're really worried that they will be affected by a solution.
Yeah. You want to explain though why they're not affected?
Well, all of their assets and income are in the U.S. They're living in Costa Rica or some other low-cost country off of their 401k, IRA, Social Security. So everything's in the U.S. already anyways.
And they're much less likely to be tax residents of another country.
They're less likely to be, or even if they are, the tax rate is lower than the U.S.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I think that's important, okay? The reason I didn't mention them is precisely because it's my view they're not affected by this at all. But I mean, if any of them are listening to this,
the problem, John, is that they're worried that the U.S. will slap non-resident withholding on them should the U.S. move to a citizenship taxation system.
Well, there's absolutely no reason to fear that at all, because you know the consensus is pretty clear that for all tax systems around the world, I mean, if you start out as a tax resident of a country and you cease to be non-resident, you know, that's generally an elective sort of thing. Number one, well, I think that's basically the point. I mean, those people would just continue filing U.S. taxes. And, you know, any definition, any move to residence-based taxation, you know, what form of it, et cetera. I mean, it's pretty clear that just given the trend in the world that there will be departure taxes, meaning, you know, if you opt to sever tax residency with the United States, you know, there's going to be something or other that you have to do. So, you know, they're not. They have no real reason to worry. They shouldn't worry.
Yeah. No, they shouldn't. But I'm just bringing it up.
I appreciate your reinforcing that for sure. And they should certainly not be campaigning against, changes in the citizenship taxation system.
Exactly.
No doubt about that. So, you know, if we look at those four groups, okay, you can see that they have very, very different interests, right? Very different interests, right? I mean, the accidentals, for example, they just really want a bank account, or they just want to be able to renounce citizenship easily. And they've even brought a couple of lawsuits, you know, to try to manage this. They're not concerned with citizenship taxation, right? The expats probably are concerned with it to some degree, but because their financial planning and center of gravity is in the United States, it's not as big of a problem for them, right? In other words, they plan to go back. But where it's devastating is for the immigrants who've left the United States, are dual tax residents, and are trying to do their financial planning, in the country of residence. Now, notice that because these groups are different in terms of the way this affects them, and also obviously their level of understanding of this, it is very, very, very hard to bring people together, in a common way, to express the dissatisfaction with this. It is very, very difficult because, you know, it just affects them differently. They see it differently. I mean, I've been involved in this, very heavily for many years, and I consider myself to be a permanent student of this, you know, these tax rules and everything. I mean, it's so incredibly complicated. But there are very few people who really even understand it well enough, you know, to kind of look back and see what's going on. But the point I want to make here is this. There's only one thing that brings this to an end for everybody affected, no matter what category you're in, and that is to sever citizenship from the definition of tax residency. Nothing else is going to do it, okay? Nothing else. And that is why I think it is absolutely critical. I think it is absolutely critical for individuals who, you know, are caught up as Americans abroad, whatever, to come together and adopt that as the objective here. Okay. Not, you know, short-term fixes that help one group but not another, you know, this sort of stuff, but come together as a strong, united group, a united voice, to get the thing that will solve the problem for all people, all the time, under all circumstances. Okay, now does that make sense to you? Now, yeah. I also want to add here that, you know, and I'm focusing on individuals, but, you know, we've got a heading here under advocacy groups. And who are the advocacy groups? Well, you know, I mean, I'll start with SEAT, although we're primarily an educational group, which provides the background understanding and stuff to help people work. I mean, it's not like SEAT is actively going out, you know, on, sort of on the retail level, you know, talking to politicians. We'll get to that in a minute. That intrudes in my life once a day, sometimes in a very helpful way. But today a tweet came through about an hour before this conversation where he said, you know, you really have to deserve to get things. You really have to deserve them. And look, there is nobody on the planet. I really believe this, that there's not a single person on the planet who feels more strongly about the injustice of these U.S. tax rules. I doubt it. Okay. But it is what it is. And unfortunately, there's an awful lot of injustice in the world. In fact, I was once speaking to a group of pre-law students in a previous life, and I pulled out a cartoon that appeared in a magazine, and it was, you know, a father holding up his young son. And he said, you know, son, there's a lot of injustice in this world, and I think you should become a lawyer so that you can make a profit off it. Okay? There is no doubt there's a lot of injustice, but people have got to do something, okay, to get change. You can't sit there just, you know, criticizing, you know, other people or criticizing the system.
I think it's also really important when we're doing this that we focus on the ideas and not the individuals. You get to the point where you see these particularly nasty Twitter threads where they are attacking the person.
Yep.
And we need to be really, really careful, I think, to be attacking the ideas and not the person.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely second that for that. You know, I mean, I think that is absolutely critical. Again, I come back to the first principle that what unites Americans abroad, regardless of political persuasion, regardless of whether there's an accidental immigrant, whatever, is far, far greater than what divides them. And therefore, you know, to adopt the goal of severing, you know, that's a unifying principle that helps everybody. No infighting necessary, right? But, you know, to get into, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, and I've been at this a long time, and I've certainly said things that I regret. I try to avoid it. Okay. But, you know, that's what happens over time. I mean, you know, I don't always have Karen, you know, behind me. Okay. You know, to remind me of these things. But I think that, you know, that a very special effort needs to be made here. Otherwise, you know, what happens is you're fighting with each other rather than, you know, trying to adopt a common goal, right? Does that make sense? I hope. I mean, I know it makes logical sense, but to do it is hard. Now, one area that I do agree with Rebecca, which she repeated, and by that I mean Democrats abroad or whatever, you know, people who are clearly trying to do what they can on this, is that, you know, individuals need to start doing something. Okay, they need to start doing something. And the question is, what can they do? What should they do? And I believe that, as difficult as it is, and it is difficult, but I believe that basically people have got to come together and put together a systematic way of communicating to Congress people or the Senate, you know, and or candidates to get this message across. Now, I'll talk about that separately, what the messages should be. And SEAT, well, actually, I don't know if I can speak for SEAT, but I think Karen and I would agree that we will work as we have before, you know, for submissions to the Senate to work up some templates, you know, to make it easier, you know, for you to get this stuff out. I also think it's important that essentially the same message keeps, you know, coming out, right? You know, so it's clear that this is a problem. And, you know, what I think that one of the things I want to achieve in this call is to get some agreement. This is going to take a follow-up call of how to organize that, right? You know, how to identify the people, how to find the people, you know, to write, you know, to send these messages to, et cetera. Now, I want to make one of the things that I always see in Twitter, and I do agree with this, by the way, and this stuff is not organized that. Now, It's not a waste of time, even if you don't get a response. And let me tell you why, okay? I guarantee you that sooner or later, there's going to be a lawsuit over this, okay? I guarantee you. I don't know when exactly. I don't know who the plaintiffs would necessarily be, but I know that things are heading in that direction. And in the context of a lawsuit, the fact of writing and communicating and no response matters. Okay, it matters. Because at the very least, it's evidence, right, being totally disrespected in the democratic process, you know, et cetera. So one of two things happens, right? You know, you don't get a response, which I think is very, very likely. But that's okay if these people get 10 letters or 20 letters that are the same and they all don't get responses. That matters. Or you get a response that's a bunch of BAF gavel that's clearly don't understand the issue. That matters. Okay? Or, I think this is unlikely, or certainly going to be in the minority, you get a response, my God, I was thinking about this citizenship taxation problem just last night. And I am so glad to hear from you. You know, that's not likely to happen, but there may be some of it. All right, particularly, so I think that, you know, the targeting needs to be, I mean, this needs to be very, very systematic and thought through. There's a lot of overseas people. There are a lot of, you know, and I think that there's a very, very good chance of, of finding the people who can claim, you know, that they're, you know, a voter in such and such a district, et cetera, right? And by the way, all right, in case you've been under a rock or something, one of the things I find very interesting is that Democrats abroad is repeatedly making the claim that the overseas vote pushed them over the edge in Arizona and Georgia. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not. And I don't even know if they really, really believe it. All right. But whether they believe it or not entirely, or whether it's true or not, it is very clear that they believe the overseas vote matters. Okay. They believe the overseas vote matters. And I'll get to, you know, and I'll get to that in a minute. Okay. Now, you know, obviously, you know, when I'm talking about trying to bring people together and promote and systematically organize this kind of grassroots advocacy, all right, thing, and it's going to be built up very gradually. But what it is, all right, is a way so that there's an organized group of people that isn't just some organization like SEED or like DA or ACA. I mean, these are perceived as organizations. And with the greatest respect to all the organizations out there who have been working on this and continue to work on this, okay, you cannot rely on organizations. Now, why do I say that? Because I believe that the only way that this is going to be changed, and a lawsuit may be part of it, but ultimately, representatives, candidates, elected officials, have to see a political risk in not responding to this. In other words, it's going to cost them. And by slowly pulling this together, and I believe that this is possible under a new sort of banner, not of organizations, but of individuals who are just collectively working together on this common message, I think it's going to greatly strengthen the perception that individuals can make a difference here. The goal is to convince these political parties, the Democrats, the Republicans, although in fairness, there aren't that many Republicans overseas, okay, it's mostly Democrats, you know, that's just a circumstance, okay, you know, is to convince these people that if they do not pay attention to this issue, there is going to be a political cost. And the reason why this is so important right now is you and I both know that all the Democrats may at the moment, you know, have all three branches of government, very, very little, one or two seats, you know, I think one in the Senate or something like that. It's all that's required to change that. So I think that the timing's probably right on that. And we'll talk more about, you know, sort of uniting people under a common banner, okay? And, you know, this isn't joining an organization or anything like that. And, you know, I wouldn't do it myself if it were joining an organization. I hate organizations. I really do. You know, I'm not that kind of person, so I know a lot of you probably aren't either, but I think that to identify with a cause as individuals, okay, and not as, you know, sort of through a group, right? I think it's very, very important here because, you know, that will make it clear. And then, you know, when these letters go in, we'll work on the templates, but it will, you know, it will align with the cause, so to speak, right? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I personally, you know, think that's a good idea. And, you know, that's what part of, you know, what I'm trying to accomplish here. I think it will also clarify the position of individuals with respect to the kind of advocacy that organizations do, whether it's SEAT, you know, whether it's ACA, whether it's DA, whether it's, you know, any of these groups or whatever, which I also think is important. Okay. And finally, you know, the question becomes, well, how do you use your actual vote to promote political change? And as long as people believe your vote counts, I think that's more important than whether it does. And there are, you know, there's evidence that it does in some states. Then, you know, I think it's important to make it clear, you know, when you're talking to groups, when you're communicating with candidates or representatives, that you communicate a very, very simple point, that there, under no circumstances will you be getting my vote unless there's a clear commitment, you know, to this. Otherwise, my personal view is, you know, to vote for any candidate or party, you know, based on sort of vague, well, you know, we're in election right now, so it's not a good time to talk about important issues. You know, first, we better win the election. I think that should be a non-starter. And I think that, you know, as we put together the general messaging, okay, what do we, you know, what do we want? Now, we're not going to say, you know, what we want is sort of the conclusion. You know, I would expect that when we get started with these templates and that, we're going to be focusing on the problems that exist. And then they are because of these tax, you know, not just the tax. I mean, you know, you talk about tax, people's eyes glaze over, you know, everybody pays. So why shouldn't you pay tax, right? But if you can make these things human, talk about a real problem, of which we know there are many, okay, you know, then I think you can get beyond the first paragraph, you know, et cetera. And, you know, and then I think probably at the end, you know, it's, you know, the iron hand and the velvet glove. That, and by the way, to be clear, that if I don't get a response to this that satisfies me, that you're going to be adopting what we're wanting, under no circumstances are you going to get the vote. Now, I just want to say that to not vote for the Republicans doesn't mean you're going to vote for the Democrats. To not vote for the Democrats doesn't mean you're going to vote for the Republicans, okay? Now, my point is this, that I would encourage you to use your vote strategically to vote for the candidates, to vote for the parties where you feel there's the greatest change, there's the greatest possibility of change on this particular issue. Now, you do have a role, obviously, in educating people. But I mean, it really doesn't matter what I think, you know, obviously, it's between you and your conscience, okay. But I will say that this has been going on now for over 10 years. For over 10 years, there have been promises, you know, of either change or we'll look at it after elections. To date, there has been zero, 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 zero response. In 2014, you know, when Senator Hatch was heading up the Senate Finance Committee, there were thousands of submissions that went in on various issues. More went in from Americans abroad as individuals than any other group of people. It got one paragraph at the end, one paragraph, just sort of noting the number of complaints and saying, well, we'll look at this down the road. And the thing is that I personally think that it's useless to vote for anybody who doesn't understand and adopt this. Now, this is a lot of, you know, sort of high level stuff, you know, for the moment. So that's talking about how to use your vote. Now, another problem is how to educate people in the United States. And, you know, this is really hard stuff, right? It's hard. We all know it's hard, but there are more movements. I mean, look, we're not the only people who are upset about what's going on politically in the United States. And there are groups that are, you know, talking about forming third parties or, you know, this sort of stuff. And, you know, for example, you know, shout out to Joe Howard is, you know, I think done some interesting things in contacting these people and using these groups as a way to, you know, begin a discussion of tax reform in general, you know, which, you know, which might include that. Okay, so that's sort of, you know, what I've tried to cover here. You know, so in summary, okay, unity is the key. Okay, absolutely. With respect to a very clear message, okay, combined with individual advocacy outreach, which we will, Karen and I, and I guess I presume, you know, other people at SEAT will continue to provide templates, you know, for this type of thing, which will emphasize problems, okay, you know, as long as, you know, if you want, you know, my vote, you're going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to respond to this sort of thing. As time goes on, I mean, we've got the, you know, all the seats in the House, I think, are up for voting. And what is it, November, October? I don't know. But I mean, there's time. But there's also, you know, presidential election in 2 years. So you need to see this also, by the way, as a long term project. OK, who was it who said, you know, people always overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 10. And I got to tell you, I believe this is achievable. Okay, I know it hasn't been achieved, but you know why it hasn't been achieved? Because individuals haven't really come together to try to play the role they need to play. And so, you know, you got to do that. And I would add also that I didn't get into, you know, I think I'll, you know, we'll talk to you separately about how to change your Twitter handles, you know, et cetera, to become part, you know, part of, you know, support of this, perhaps email signatures, you know, so that everything you do, right, just in the course of life, you know, whether you tweet something out, you know, even if it's not related to it, or an email signature, you know, et cetera, becomes a way of engaging people in sort of an educational way. And this would include people in the United States. But I could go on and on. Karen, what do I need to add before we stop the record?
No, I think you've covered it all pretty well, John. I think that.
Okay, so I want to stop the record now so you all can talk. And we will, you know, I want to get your reaction to this. Okay, so just hold on. You'll hear recording stopped. Okay, I'm a Luddite, by the way. I think it's the word. I'm bad at anything with buttons and technology. So give me a break here. Stop recording.